This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
20 minutes after the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. NHL this week, special Monday edition, recapping the NHL trade deadline. Drew Mundell, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor with you. Let's look at some of the other Central Division moves as we sit here on Monday evening. It was certainly an arms race, as we all expected, in the Central Division. The Nashville Predators, obviously the chief rivals to the Winnipeg Jets, were very busy. They acquired Michael Granlund and Wayne Simmonds. Granlund from the Minnesota Wild, Simmonds from the Philadelphia Flyers. Leaving the Nashville Predators are Kevin Fiala, Ryan Hartman, and a conditional fourth round pick in 2020. That becomes a third round pick if Nashville wins a playoff round. You'd expect that to happen. So your thoughts on the Predators? They acquire Granlund and Simmonds, they lose Fiala, Hartman, and a third round pick.
Yeah, well, first of all, second year in a row that Ryan Hartman was traded before the trade deadline.
Well,
right?
If you remember that, the Predators last year at the deadline traded a first round pick to acquire Ryan Hartman. He had one good game, his first game.
Scored the game winner, didn't he, against the Jets?
4 points against the, 4 or 5 points against the Jets. That was his first game with the Predators. After that, he's been basically a bust in Nashville, and they traded him to get Wayne Simmonds, but they probably regret giving up the first round pick initially.
Sure, and you know, Ryan Hartman's a good hockey player. I thought the price that they paid was a little bit steep, but I think when you're talking about Wayne Simmonds, I think there were multiple teams after Simmonds. I think the Jets, I wouldn't be surprised if they were in on Wayne Simmonds, and I think you'd throw in a few other teams in there. Boston was one of the teams that was rumored to be involved, Calgary, so I think when you talk about, let's start off with the bigger trade, Michael Granlund for Kevin Fiala. Kevin Fiala is obviously a first-round pick, guys, but he's a guy that has had varying degrees of success, and they've always wanted more out
of
Fiala.
He's never been the same since he broke his leg in the playoffs 2 years ago.
Well, that injury definitely took a toll on him, and I think when you look at the opportunity they gave him, they put Fiala in positions to succeed.
Top six winger. Right,
Peter Laviolette, is a great coach, and we know that he knows what he's doing. He's had success everywhere he's gone. But when you talk about Granlund, you're talking about a guy who's averaged 68 points over the last couple of years. So he's a better offensive player right now than Kevin Fiala. Mm-hmm. Can Fiala eventually turn into a 30-goal scorer? David Poile was Predators GM, of course. David Poile was quoted as saying that he does believe that he can become a 30-goal scorer, Kevin Fiala, that is. So, I mean, Fiala, we don't know yet if he's going to turn into what they thought he was going to turn into, but the point is,
but Nashville needs to win now.
Well, exactly. So Granlund makes a lot of sense for right now. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that bolsters that second line, right?
Because helps the power play immensely.
He helps the power play.
Which is the worst power play in the league. Sorry.
Well, and it's shocking, right? Because Nashville is one of the top teams in the West, but they just can't get their power play going. If you remember a couple of years back, it was the same situation with the Jets. It was only until last year where the Jets had one of the top power plays in the league. So you're right. Mikael Granlund is a very skilled player. He's got a great shot. He's also a great playmaker. So in that sense, I really like the move. It makes them better right now. And what I like probably the most, guys, about what Nashville did is they didn't give up Elli Tolvanen. Elli Tolvanen is the Predators' top prospect right now. He's tearing up the AHL with the Milwaukee Admirals.
He's doing an admirable job.
But Tolvanen is a guy they have really high hopes for, right? 30th overall pick a couple of years ago, and he was a guy that was rumored to maybe be on the move on the trading block. So they bring in Wayne Simmonds, they bring in Mikael Granlund, and they don't give up one of their top prospects. So in that sense,
sort of sounds similar to what the Jets did in acquiring Kevin Hayes without giving up a top prospect.
Right, they don't give up Christian Vesalainen, they don't give up, you know, a Sammy Niku or something like that. So I like, as a whole, I like what the Predators did because, as you mentioned, the Predators are a team that are going for it now, like the Jets. The Predators went to the Stanley Cup final a couple of years ago, Shawnee. They didn't get past the second round. They know they're going to have to go up against the Jets, in the second round, most likely. So I think overall it was a pretty good day for David Poile.
Yeah, you have to think that, hypothetically, every move that the Preds make, they have in mind, how can we beat Winnipeg? Right? What can we add to our roster that we don't lose in the second round to the Jets again? And like you were talking about, Ezzy, Mikael Granlund, speed, skill, he's a great playmaker. Defensively, maybe needs to shore up a bit, but regardless, that's not why they brought him on the team. But for me, Wayne Simmonds is huge, and you talk about the power play struggles. Mm-hmm. Where does Wayne Simmonds make his paychecks?
Power
in
play.
Front of the net.
Yeah.
He's net front. And what does Nashville like to do on the power play? They like to blast the puck from the point.
TK Subban with the one-timer atop the umbrella from the point.
Roman Josi, yeah. You name it. These guys can hammer the puck on net. So to have him there to not only screen goaltenders, but then to back that booty up and, you know, clean up the garbage around the net, a tremendous ad. I really, really like what the Preds have done. And like you guys were talking about, Ellie Tolvin is still in the system.
Right, and it wasn't too long ago, guys, that Brian Boyle was acquired, right? And they've played him a little bit on the wing. He can play center, but the point is, now in your bottom six, you've got Wayne Simmonds and Brian Boyle. Those are two players that you didn't have a month ago. Mm-hmm. And those are two veteran players with a lot of NHL experience. Remember Boyle with the Rangers and lesser so a little bit of playoffs with
Tampa,
the Devils.
Tampa.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, these are guys that have gone through the playoff experience, and these are guys that'll, I think, be very useful for Peter Laviolette. So, you know, I still think, though, that the Jets have more depth and can beat the Predators in a second-round series, but ultimately it's going to come down to goaltending, special teams, and all of that. But the Jets and the Predators should go down to seven games, at the very least six games. There's not really one advantage, because probably you'd give the Predators the advantage when it comes to their top 4D. But then you give the Jets the advantage when it comes to their forward depth and then maybe goaltending and special teams.
Well, goaltending not in the playoffs last year. Hellebuck played Pekka Rinne, of course, in that second-round series. Both teams improved. And, I mean, it cost both teams certain assets. I mean, Kevin Fiala for Michael Granlund is a win today. Ryan Hartman for Wayne Simmonds, I think, is a win. Wayne Simmonds for Ryan Hartman is a win for today. You know, I like the moves David Poile made. You knew when the Jets acquired Hayes, he had to do something, and it really seemed like it was going right down to the wire as to when he was going to do, but he eventually pulled off, and I think the two best teams in the Central Division, the Jets and the Predators, probably took a leap ahead of the other teams in the Central, the Colorados, the St. Louis's. Let's go through some of the other acquisitions real quick. St. Louis was pretty quiet today. They acquired Michael Delzato.
I said they were going to be quiet on Saturday.
Yeah.
I said that. I mean, why would you need to add anybody the way they're playing right now?
Well, you thought maybe they wanted to add another one to even step up even higher. They've been playing so well as of late. Michael Delzato from the Anaheim Ducks for a sixth round pick. I mean, tragic, and it's not tragic, but Matt Zuccarello gets traded to the Dallas Stars on the weekend in exchange.
And then he breaks his wrist.
Yeah, then he breaks his hand after scoring a goal and an assist.
Will require surgery, apparently.
That's right. So you got to sort of feel bad for the Dallas Stars. He looked like a great fit initially there. Boom, blocks a shot, breaks his arm. You know, who knows what the rest of the season looks like for Matt Zuccarello. It's hard to believe that he's going to be a very active player. You know, they'd have to make a run probably into the playoffs at that point.
Dallas has been awful lately. Like, when you look at the Western Conference, Dallas is the one team that just hasn't taken advantage of how poorly all the other teams have played. Colorado, too.
Well,
let's get to Colorado. I mean, the Derek Brassard trade, to me, was a great trade.
They get Derek Brassard from the Florida Panthers in exchange for a 2020 third-round pick. And they also get a sixth-round pick that's conditional. And if they re-sign Brassard, they don't end up getting that pick.
Right, and I realize that Florida wanted to get rid of Brassard, right?
A guy whose stock has fallen in 12 months.
Well, that's what I'm saying. When you're talking about, you know, Derek Brassard, last year at this time, we were talking about the Jets possibly giving up their first-round pick.
Sure.
So Colorado only has to give up a third-round pick and then a conditional pick. We have no idea.
No, they get the conditional pick.
Sorry, they got a conditional pick, so all they gave up was the third round pick. So I think that's a really good day for Joe Sakic, because Derek Brassard is going to slot in nicely as their second-line center, because Nathan MacKinnon's obviously their top-line center. And now that they've split up Gabe Landeskog, they've taken him off that top line, and now they've moved him to that second line. Gabe Landeskog and Tyson Jost are going to be the wingers on that second line, and then you have Alex Kerfoot on that top line. I mean, those lines could change. But
you know, Carl Soderberg, who had been the second-line center, has had a great
year. Now he slots down. What does he have, 22 goals?
I think Soderberg's ahead of Brassard on that depth chart. I mean, Brassard has been pretty lousy all season long, and Carl Soderberg's been playing so well for the Avalanche. I don't think you start to mess with that. I think Soderberg still gets the majority, gets more ice time than Brassard, and Brassard's going to be, you got to prove it, buddy, because you haven't done anything in Pittsburgh all year. You weren't really anything in Florida, although, you know, who knows about anything that's going on in Florida. So, I mean, it's a good acquisition. I like it for the cost you paid, but Brassard really needs to show something at this point.
Right, but it just gives them more depth up the middle.
Absolutely.
Similar to the Jets, so they're a better team than they were yesterday, right?
Top heavy. No question.
So Colorado knows that they're not as good as the Jets or the Predators, or at least I hope they know that. But, I mean, you're gonna require excellent goaltending. You're going to require your goaltender to steal a game if they make the playoffs. The Avalanche might miss the playoffs. Well, we have to remember that. They're not firmly in a playoff spot right now.
No, of course they're not. I mean, the Western Conference has been that lousy. I mean, you wonder if Minnesota, they almost seem to be waving the white towel and asking people to overcome them. But they've won three games in a row. I mean, you're not as good. The Wild aren't as good right now as they were at the start of the day. I mean, Fiala is not as good of a player as Granlund right here in the here and now. So you wonder eventually.
Ryan Donato's doing, though, now.
Well, I mean,
he's been terrific since they acquired him.
You wonder, eventually, does Colorado overtake Minnesota? It hasn't happened yet. And we know the Wild are in town tomorrow to face the Jets. The Jets have two back-to-back Central Division games against the Wild and then that Friday night game against Nashville, which I think is going to be a lot of fun as the two best teams in the Central Division gear up to do battle and really get into the playoff stretch drive.
Yeah, I know we got to go to break here, but yeah. Is anybody going to argue that the Jets and Predators are the best rivalry in hockey right now?
I can't really think of one off the top of my head that's better when those two teams meet. You remember they met right after the trade deadline last year, and it was the great 6-5 win for the Predators, back and forth game, terrific hockey. You sort of expect to see the same on Friday because both these teams are going to look to make a statement against each other. They only have a couple meetings before the trade deadline.
Maybe Toronto, Boston in the East, but as far as the West goes, I really don't think you have a rivalry that compares to the Jets and Preds. I mean, these two teams hate each other, and they know they have to go through one another to get to the Stanley Cup final.
It's true. When we come back, John Mattis is the national hockey writer for thescore.com. He joins us to talk about the NHL trade deadline day and recap what was a busy day throughout the NHL. You're listening to a special Monday edition of NHL This Week, live on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Monday night, we're recapping the NHL trade deadline. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Sean Assor. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. We want to hear from you on the Twitter machine. Send us some of your comments about what you saw happen today at the NHL trade deadline. And, of course, our website, it's got the latest Jets and Moose news and audio, is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend John Mattis. John is the national hockey writer for thescore.com. John, good evening. Thanks for joining us on what undoubtedly was a busy trade deadline day.
Yeah, it was super busy. Thanks for having me on, guys. And how are things in Winnipeg?
Things in Winnipeg are good. I think the acquisition of Kevin Hayes has gone over well with the fan base. We'll obviously know more about how it's gone over on the ice tomorrow night when they face the Minnesota Wild. But, as we sit here, the trade deadline now being about, 4.5 hours in the rearview mirror, I'd say most people are pleasantly surprised or pleasantly agreeable with what the Jets have done today.
That's fair. I really like the Kevin Hayes addition. Like, I realized he was going to be moved at some point, but the fact that he was moved before Mark Stone is interesting, and I just wonder if, Winnipeg went in for one final pitch. Ottawa said, hey, no thanks, and then they went straight to the New York Rangers and said, let's get this done before someone else gets into the conversation, because I think Hayes can be a difference maker for them. I think he's underrated defensively. I think no one ever talks about that. He's a pretty good three-zone player. Can obviously score. He's on pace for a career year. I think even though Winnipeg had a pretty enviable forward group, down the middle was, I guess you could say, their weakness. Although I think a lot of teams would like to have their center depth in general, but adding Hayes is taking it to another level.
Yeah, John Mattis of thescore.com is our guest. John, what do you make of the fact that the majority of the major acquisitions today were by Western Conference teams? If you sort of took a step back, you would say the West is wide open. There's maybe five upper echelon teams there, and any of those five teams could win the West. Meanwhile, the East, with the Tampa Bay Lightning being far and away the best team in the NHL and the best team in the Eastern Conference, do you think that had an effect on those Eastern Conference teams maybe keeping their powder dry with big moves ahead of the deadline?
I mean, it's possible. I wouldn't rule it out. I guess we shouldn't forget that the Maple Leafs picked up Muzzin about a month ago. That was kind of their big move. The Bruins picking up Marcus Johansson, I guess it's a big-ish move, but again, it doesn't move the needle to the extent of some of the what the Western teams did. New York Islanders were surprisingly silent, really. And there's never much that comes out of a Lou Lamoriello managed team. So who knows? Maybe they are in on a bunch of these big names and just swung and missed. But that's a good point. I mean, the Western teams really dominated the headlines, whether it was the Jets or the Preds picking up a couple of quality forwards to really supplement what they're trying to do there and win a cup, given that their defense and their goaltending is you know, elite. Now you could say that their forwards beyond their first line, which has been dominant, beyond their first line now, they have some depth there. And then, you know, Calgary doesn't really get into it too much, so I guess you could put them in the same category as the New York Islanders, where there was a possibility that they could have made some noise, but maybe just couldn't find the right fits. And, you know, obviously salary cap is always a factor in that matter. And Mark Stone going to Vegas and Nyquist going to San Jose. Yeah, the West really kind of stole the day. And obviously Mark Stone being the big prize, the grand prize that everyone was after. And Vegas managing to win this time. Last year, they tried to get Eric Karlsson out of Ottawa in a similar situation, although that Karlsson had an extra year left on his deal. But nonetheless, really going for it and not holding back. And this time it pays off. And obviously, there's the connection to, as you guys know, Kelly McCrimmon, their assistant GM, was Stone's manager back in junior. There's no doubt that factored in. And being able to get an eight-year deal done is gigantic. So I think Vegas is a big winner on the day, and I think Nashville made out very well too, if I'm picking two teams that stick off the page to me.
John, you were recently in the great state of Ohio covering the Columbus Blue Jackets, and they've obviously been one of the most active teams along with the Winnipeg Jets. They acquired Matt Duchene and Ryan Dzingel first from the Ottawa Senators, and then earlier today they acquired Keith Kincaid from the New Jersey Devils, and they acquired Adam McQuaid, which rhymes with Keith Kincaid. But when you look at what the Columbus Blue Jackets have done over the last 3 days and not moving Artemi Panarin and Sergei Bobrovsky, both pending UFAs, do you like what Jarmo Kekäläinen has done here with the Blue Jackets leading up to the trade deadline?
I absolutely love it. And I wouldn't normally. I'm a pretty long-term guy in terms of building a team like this. The Winnipeg Jets are a perfect example. They've waited and waited and waited. Kevin Trebeldayoff was very silent on the trade market for years, and then had this window where he knew, like, we can win a Stanley Cup with this core, and then pulled the trigger on moves. I'm typically that guy too, but the context of the Columbus Blue Jackets situation is too heavy to ignore. It's too, you know, nuanced to ignore, where they've been in Columbus for as long as the Minnesota Wild have been in Minnesota. That's a whole 17, now 18 years. And they have zero playoff wins, 5 wins total in the playoffs. Just let's face it, more or less an irrelevant team until recently, the last couple of years. A team that free agents never really go to, a team that wasted Rick Nash's prime. And they find themselves in this really weird situation where they have I wouldn't say the two best players, but two of their top five players in Bobrovsky and Panarin saying, we're probably not going to re-sign here. So, I mean, trade us if you want. Obviously, Panarin had the trade protection, but nevertheless, there probably could have been a deal worked out there. And Jarmo Kekäläinen and the GM there doubling down and going, you know what, this is the best time in our franchise, so we're just going to push all our chips into the middle of the table and go for it. And I think given the situation, given the fact that, you know, it's pro sports and you know, winning is fleeting and all that kind of stuff, where sometimes you just have to say screw it and go for it. I think that's essentially what they did. And obviously, the first Matt Duchene, getting him really got the ball rolling, because then you're going, oh, you know, he's a legitimate, I don't know if he's a legitimate number one elite center, but he can at least play the number one spot on a good team, I don't know about on a great team. And it pushes down Pierre-Luc Dubois. So all of a sudden, it changes the complexion of your forward group. And then you add Ryan Dzingel, who's having a very good year, who played locally in Columbus. He went to college there. So there's also a chance that he resigns. So, you know, there starts to be more momentum built, and then you pick up Keith Kincaid today to back up Bobrovsky, which is, you know, a minor upgrade on Korpisalo, and then Adam McQuaid to supplement your defense. And all of a sudden, Columbus, I wouldn't say they're a contender or they're an elite team like Winnipeg, Nashville, you know, Tampa, that group. But they're in that probably second tier, maybe third tier. It depends how detailed you want to get. But, like, it took some balls what Kekalainen did, and they might ultimately just win one series, maybe two. But I think, honestly, it's in the end, it's worth it because you're showing your fans that you actually care. You're showing your fans that when push comes to shove, you want to show the hockey world that you're relevant and that you will chase after the big names. And they do have an opportunity here to maybe change some minds. Maybe Panarin comes around. Probably not, but you never know if they go on a run. Duchene seems open to the possibility of staying in Columbus, although he's probably going to test the market as well. So there's a lot of possibilities there. It could all blow up in their face, but in the moment, given what we know, I think Kekalainen made the right decision to go for it.
John, you mentioned it right off the top, a real sneaky good move that hasn't really gotten a lot of airtime, just maybe because of the timing it happened late last night, but Gustav Nyquist going to the San Jose Sharks for a 2019 second-round pick and a conditional 2020 third-round pick. I mean, that's a really good player all being added to a really good roster out west.
No, absolutely. And, when you look at what's happening with San Jose and Joe Thornton's able to be pretty effective in a third-line role, even though he's 39, because he's getting sheltered minutes. So you have Joe Thornton centering a third line where maybe Gustav Nyquist ends up. And, all of a sudden you have a pretty formidable top nine. You know, you have guys like Pavelski, Couture, Hurdle, Meyer, Kane. Like, it's LeBanc's having a hell of a year. San Jose has zero issues on the back end. Sure, they could have someone that just shuts the door and is a little more responsible defensively, because Vlasic used to be that guy. He's just not that guy anymore. So I guess you could nitpick with their defense, but overall, when you have Carlson and Burns there, you are laughing. In goalie, some concerns, but I think Martin Jones is, when it's all said and done, is essentially a league average goalie. And then you look at the forward group, and it's always been pretty good, but I think just what they were able to accomplish in getting Nyquist there and have him, like Thornton, in a bit of an undercover, under the radar role on the third line, if that's where he ends up playing, I just think it's sneaky good. I don't think they gave up a ton for him. So there's a lot to like there. And the Sharks they've had a really road-heavy start to their season. I say start, but I guess for 60 games. And they've just played a lot of games, back-to-backs and going through a bunch of time zones and stuff, which seems like a lame excuse. But considering they had Carlson trying to embed himself and acclimate to a new team, I think that's notable. So I don't think we've seen the best from the Sharks. And, like, that team has fun, too. I mean, like, between Pavelski and Burns, and, there's a million characters in there that they really kind of just, they get it, and they've been through it, and now they just need to finish the job, which is a Stanley Cup, and I think this might be their best chance out of all the years they've had together in this sort of Thornton era.
John, I wanted to ask you about the Boston Bruins. That was a team that a lot of people thought was going to be active, and they were. They acquired Marcus Johansson from the New Jersey Devils, and earlier last week they acquired Charlie Coyle from the Minnesota Wild for Ryan Donato. How did you think the Boston Bruins did prior to the trade deadline? That's obviously a team that is most likely going to play the Toronto Maple Leafs in the first round, but I think a lot of people thought they were going to land a bigger fish, whether that was going to be a Mark Stone or a Kevin Hayes who's from the area.
Yeah, and I know Wayne Simmonds was mentioned a lot too, but I don't know. I think I'd rather have Marcus Johansson than Wayne Simmonds at the point of their careers. Johansson's kind of been forgotten about because he's been injured so much recently, but I just think he's a tremendous player, whereas Simmonds is declining more rapidly. But Boston in general, I think that you can draw a line between them and the Sharks in terms of their seasons and maybe not seeing the full potential of these teams, because Boston's been completely beat up between Charlie McAvoy being out, a couple of forwards, including Patrice Bergeron at certain points. Like, they haven't really fielded or iced a full roster for any long stretch of time. And the fact that they got Charlie Coyle and Johansson now to throw in to their forward group, I think that's huge. I think they were a completely one-line team before, and, with guys like Jake DeBrusk and David Krejci thrown in there. But I think it gets forgotten that, like, if you're already a pretty good. This is, it kind of relates to Nashville too. If you're already one of the best teams in the league, and when Boston's healthy, I think they are. If you're able to add around the edges in regards to your secondary scoring, I think that's pretty huge. I think if you try to go into the playoffs with a one line team or a one line offense like Nashville was about to do, or like Boston tends to do, I think even though that can might win you a series, I don't think you can go very deep. So I think Boston's gonna scare some people here down the stretch once they get fully healthy. I mean, it's going to be a battle if it ends up being Boston versus Toronto, because, yeah, there's the history of Boston beating Toronto. But Toronto didn't even have Tavares then, or Toronto was, you know, a year younger as a core group. But at the same time, you look at Boston and what they've added, and the fact that they do have that sort of X factor of toughness or heavy hockey or whatever you want to call it, which, let's face it, Toronto still doesn't have even after the deadline. So that's going to be a fascinating storyline. If they end up meeting in the playoffs, it's going to be, I would think, a game seven.
John Mattis is the national hockey writer for thescore.com. John, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks for joining us to cap a very busy trade deadline day in the NHL.
Hey, no problem, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Take care, John. Thanks again. When we come back, we look at the Pacific Division, the moves that were made there, and how that impacts the Winnipeg Jets as well. You're listening to NHL This Week. It's a special Monday edition, wrapping up trade deadline coverage here on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
10 minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor with you in studio. We continue our look at the moves that were made on this busy NHL trade deadline day. We shift our focus to the Pacific Division, and we're going to start with the big trade that the Vegas Golden Knights consummated, acquiring Mark Stone from the Ottawa Senators in exchange for defenseman Eric Brandstrom, Oscar Lindberg, and a 2020 second round pick. In addition to acquiring Stone, they then sign him to a contract extension, an 8-year, $76 million contract extension. That's an average annual value of $9.5 million. Does the acquisition of Mark Stone make this Vegas Golden Knights team better than the two teams they're currently chasing in the standings, the San Jose Sharks and the Calgary Flames?
Yeah, I think it makes them a better team, but I don't know if it makes them as good, especially the San Jose Sharks.
Right. So, well, the Sharks,
because I still think the San Jose Sharks are the better overall team of the Sharks and the Flames. The Flames are a better offensive team.
Let's talk about the Sharks acquisition, sure, so we can really deal with the Pacific Division, the top of the Pacific Division as a whole.
Yep.
The San Jose Sharks late last night acquired Gustav Nyquist from the Detroit Red Wings in exchange for a 2019 second round pick and a conditional 2020 third round pick that could upgrade to a second round pick if the Sharks advance to the Stanley Cup final. So really a second round pick and a third round pick for Gustav Nyquist. So look at what Vegas did acquiring Stone. Look at what San Jose did in acquiring Gustav Nyquist. Calgary was very quiet. They acquired only depth defenseman Oscar Fantenberg from the Los Angeles Kings. So how do you see the Pacific Division shaking out in the next, you know, the remainder of the regular season and then into the playoffs?
Yeah, I wasn't really surprised that the Flames weren't that active. I mean, you heard that they might be after one or two players, right? Mark Stone was the guy they were clearly after. We know that his brother's on the team and all of that, and he could have made them a better team. But Calgary's stacked as is. And, you know, I just mentioned the Sharks are a better team. If you actually go by goals against, the Flames have allowed less goals this year, but I think overall, when you look at that group of defensemen that San Jose is able to put out, I mean, at points this year, guys, they've had Mark-Edward Vlasic on their third pair. This is a guy who's been an Olympian for Canada, mm-hmm, right? So Erik Karlsson, Brent Burns, I mean, Brendan Dillon, we know the guys they can put out there. So I still think that San Jose is a better overall team, but getting back to your original question, Gustav Nyquist, to get him and not have to give up any top prospects or have to give up any of your current roster
just
players.
Just draft capital.
Right. So yeah, you have those draft picks to get up, to give up. And when you're talking about the Sharks, they're similar to the Jets. They're similar to the Predators. Win now team. Right. Joe Thornton is in either his last year or one of his last years. He's going to play only one or two more years, if any. Yeah. So they know that with Joe Thornton now in the lineup, they got to go for it. And, you know, I still think that the Sharks are a team that you don't want to play in the first round, whether or not they finish first or second, whoever they end up playing, they might end up playing the Vegas Golden Knights in the first round.
Well, right now, the Flames are the top team in the Pacific Division. The Sharks are second, and Vegas is more or less locked into that third
spot. But the Flames are only
spot.
Up by 3 points, right?
So San Jose and Calgary are battling it out. Vegas is more or less locked into that third position.
Right, so either Calgary or San Jose is going to play Vegas in the first round, and I think both of those teams are bad matchups for Vegas. Because if you look at Vegas, what's been the huge difference between Vegas this year and last year? That top line is not produced at the same level. And Marc-Andre Fleury's playing too much, guys. I know we've talked about it on the Saturday show before, but you know, he's by far played the most games in the NHL, and he's been excellent. He's arguably a Vezina Trophy finalist at this point. But I think when you look at the Golden Knights, and then you look at what the Flames and the Sharks have done, not just at the trade deadline, but in the offseason, obviously, the Flames brought in Elias Lindholm. They brought in Noah Hanifin and James Neal. And Neal's injured right now, so that was why the Flames might bring in someone else to replace James Neal.
Well, he's been horrendous all year long also. He's been the worst free agent signing of the season.
Right, but he has gone to the Stanley Cup Final the last 2 years. So
fine, very
that
well.
Means the Flames are going to the Stanley
Cup
Final.
Is that how that works? It's just not automatic math there?
It's just science.
Yeah, exactly. Science dictates that. So, you know, Shawnee, from your perspective, the Sharks with Nyquist, the Golden Knights with Stone, and I guess part of the acquisition of Stone, though, is that you now have him for the next 8 years. So it's not necessarily just a rental. They were able to get him signed to that long-term deal, so it's more than just a straight rental acquisition, so that's more appealing from the Vegas Golden Knights perspective. Calgary basically stands pat today. I like the acquisition of Stone. I'd be lying if I said that I knew exactly how good Brännström's going to be. I haven't watched him that much. I've
seen
him.
Hold on. He was drafted in 2017.
Yeah.
Okay. He was a 15th overall pick. You can say the same thing about Christian Vesalainen, and you can say the same thing about a lot of players. I'll tell you this much: all the scouts loved him before he was drafted. Some thought he should be a top 10 pick, and he was excellent at the most recent World Junior. So again, we don't know if he's going to be a 40-point defenseman or a 50-point defenseman, but right now his upside is very high. So I think, you know, when you talk about the return for Mark Stone, I think they did pretty well.
Yeah, and like initially when that trade broke and we were kind of analyzing it here throughout the day, we were thinking, like, did Ottawa get enough? But then you see the reaction, especially the TSN insiders, you know, McKenzie, Dreger, LeBrun, and they're all thrilled with the return going back to Ottawa. So obviously there's something with this kid. And
and Brännström, Shawnee, is...
I don't know how
he's not going to be Erik Karlsson. First off, Erik Karlsson, he's a future Hall of Famer. Well, maybe he does, but at the very least, he's going to be a top four defenseman for you, even a top pairing defenseman for you, probably 2 or 3 years down the road. You weren't going to keep Mark Stone, so you have a prospect, you get a draft pick. I mean, everyone's talking about how they didn't get a first-round pick. Well, they did get a first-round pick. Erik Brännström was a first-round pick.
Yeah,
right.
Fair enough. I mean, that is a way to look at it. Is that you got a guy who, you know, who's 2 years along his development curve, or, you know, when he was a first-round pick, and they probably, if you had to redo that draft now, doesn't go in the teens of that draft. He goes in the top 10 of that draft. So if you're an Ottawa fan, that's sort of how you have to look at it. If you're a Vegas fan, you have to say, wow. I mean, we still have a fair bit of depth. We didn't. I mean, they had already traded their first round pick, you know, so they didn't go even deeper into their prospect pool. And you go, that second round pick is Dallas's second round pick that they got in the Mark Methot deal back at the expansion draft. So, you know, if you're Vegas and you get Mark Stone for the next 8 years, you're happy. $9.5 million fair. Is that what Stone was going to get on the open market?
Yeah, I mean, based on the year he's having, right, he's on pace for, 35, 37 goals? He's at 28 right now. He's a great player. He's a great all-around player, so
probably getting
it's a little bit high, maybe, but, I mean, he got it, right?
So. Yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, he got it. Whether or not, he was going to get somewhere close to it. It's not a dramatic overpay. Maybe it's a half a million dollar overpay just to keep him away from free agency altogether. But, you know, in the here and the now, and we'll talk about this next segment when we sort of rank the Western Conference and the contenders in the Western Conference, I'm not sure that Vegas is better than the Sharks or the Flames.
No, I agree with you. That's why I said that. I still think the Sharks and the Flames overall are better teams. But if you're Vegas, I mean, you still had a pretty good day because you got the biggest fish in the pond, right?
When we come back, we look at the Western Conference as a whole, the Pacific Division, the Central Division. Is there a clear-cut favorite to represent the West in the Stanley Cup Finals? We talk about that next. You're listening to NHL This Week. It's a special Monday edition wrapping up the trade deadline coverage on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of NHL This Week starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor with you in studio. This segment is brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For freshly made and fresh frozen and foods delivered right to your door, visit shopbernsteins.com or check them out in person. That's at the Cordon Village Mall in the corner of Cordon and Lanark. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
I think Shawnee Assor needs an Illegal Curve sandwich. He's been here all day as opposed to us bums who have only been here for a couple of hours.
Speak for yourself.
I could go for an Illegal
Curve
sandwich.
You could go for an Illegal Curve sandwich?
I'm not even that hungry. I had that PB sandwich earlier, but it's just such a delicious sandwich. I'm just thinking about the salami and the fried onions.
Right, it's now. A good sandwich. There's no disputing that's a quality sandwich.
You have crunchy peanut butter on that sandwich?
It was smooth, but I do prefer crunchy.
Interesting. Somebody actually on Twitter was very concerned about the about your quality of your honey, which I'm not actually kidding about. Somebody, hang on, let me find the tweet here.
Please, talk among yourselves for a moment. When you buy a big container of honey and then you put it away and like a couple months later, it's crystallized and it's hard. And
I don't even know, like, I couldn't even name a brand of honey. Like, what's a good brand of honey?
Honeybee.
Yeah, I guess Honeybee.
Whatever the Super Value brand name is. The
Compliments brand at Safeway.
Yeah, Jared, here it is. Jared says, what was wrong with your honey? Isn't honey good for eternity?
Well, you could eat it and you can melt it, but I was in a bit of a rush and didn't have time to put the crystallized honey into the cup and melt it and spread it on. So I went straight PB. I was a little rattled with the mold in the jam, especially because I ate the jam 2 days ago. So the mold was in there then, so started thinking, and here we are, PB sandwich.
What about marmalade, Drew? Do you like a marmalade?
No, I'm not a big marmalade guy. I'm a jam guy. I mean, jam isn't...
Huckleberry, right?
If I have a peanut butter sandwich, I rarely go for jam. I just usually...
Really?
Yeah, I'm just... You go on peanut
bananas.
Butter.
You go bananas?
No, I don't go bananas
you
either.
You try PB honey?
Yeah.
PB honey's good. PB honey's amazing.
It adds some nice little sweetness there. I get you. I understand where you're coming with that. In any event, let's talk about the Western Conference.
Are we live?
Chris Curry's back to just cut our mics for the rest of the hour, you know, after the peanut butter segment. But let's talk about the Western Conference now. So there's five upper echelon teams in the West, and I'm going to say that the St. Louis Blues are sort of there. They're not upper echelon there, but they are certainly a team to keep an eye on.
I would say four, but okay.
Okay, let's start there then. Who are you taking out? You're taking Vegas out of that equation?
Yes.
Okay, so even with the acquisition of Mark Stone, you don't think that they are in the same category as the Jets and the Predators and the Sharks and the Flames?
Correct.
Interesting. So you trust, I mean, my question...
I think Vegas could easily be out in the first round this year.
Well, if they face the Sharks in the first round, I agree. I think they can beat the Flames. I don't think they can beat the Sharks. When they acquired Stone, I looked at it and said, in the first round, if your first round playoff matchup is San Jose-Vegas, which is as it would be today...
And it was last year, too.
That was our second round matchup. Vegas beat
LA. Yeah, but I'm just saying they played last year
where Vegas took care of them relatively easily. I think San Jose is a better team
Sharks
this year.
Sharks didn't have Erik Karlsson last year, though.
They didn't have Erik Karlsson. Obviously, they didn't have Gustav Nyquist. They had Evander Kane. They acquired him at the deadline last year.
Yep.
And Vegas was on that magical run. The magic in Vegas has not been there this
magic
year.
Magic carpet ride.
Yeah, they've been struggling. You saw Gerard Gallant really get into his team for their performance lately on home ice. They've been awful. Mm-hmm. To me, San Jose isn't really being discussed as maybe the best team in the Western Conference, but given the acquisition
of Speaking of home records, they're basically unbeatable at home, like the Jets. They're 19-5-5 at home.
Are the Sharks the best team in the Western Conference? That's the question, then. I mean, they're not being talked about right now as that best team. I think it's still the conversation focuses on the Jets and the Predators. But to me, San Jose very easily can be considered the best team in the West.
I don't think they are. I think they're one of the best four teams.
Okay.
I still think the Jets and the Preds are their top two teams. That's just me personally. And when you talk about, you know, some of the moves that were made today, I think that just reinforces how good the Jets and the Preds are that are in the Central Division. Also, the Pacific Division is not as good as the Central. I think we'd all agree with that. But the Sharks are a great team. There's no doubt about that, Drew. And I actually picked the Sharks to win the Stanley Cup, if you remember, at the beginning of the season.
Well, it's amazing they haven't, they're not going to miss the playoffs altogether then.
So,
in that
yes,
case.
They are a great team. And that's why I said, I think if the Sharks play the Golden Knights, or, I mean, if the Sharks end up playing whoever it is, would it be Dallas or Minnesota or Colorado, whoever they play, if there's a crossover situation, I think the Sharks easily could go deep into the playoffs. I mean, let's look at it for a second at the San Jose Sharks' top nine forwards. Okay, Timo Meier is having a great year.
Yeah, Logan, a breakout season for Meier. Yeah.
Logan Couture.
Yeah.
Joe Pavelski, that's your top line. Mm-hmm. Evander Kane, Tomas Hertl, and Jonas Donskoi on your second line. Third line has been Joe Thornton, Marcus Sorensen, and Kevin LeBanc. But now Gustav Nyquist is probably on there.
Yeah.
Those top nine forwards
are
with the exception of the Jets, probably the best in the league.
Yeah, and their fourth line. If Marcus Sorensen gets bumped down to that fourth line, he's a very good player as well. Again, he's not flashy. He's not going to get the headlines by any stretch. Again, San Jose's not going to get the headlines because their games don't start until 9 or 9:30 here, and you're probably not watching them as closely as you are a lot of the Central Division rivals of the Winnipeg Jets. But to me, and then you look at their defense. And, I mean the names that just, you know, Carlson, Vlasic, Burns, Braun, Dillon. I mean, they're, you know, now Carlson's injured, and you wonder if it's a serious injury, what that's going to mean for the San Jose Sharks. It's probably, if it's a serious injury that's going to keep him out of the lineup into the playoffs, it's a huge killer for the Sharks, but there's no word that it's that serious yet. The big question, I think, for
the most concerning thing, sorry to interrupt you, Drew, the most concerning thing about that injury is that earlier this season, Carlson had the groin injury, and it was clearly a groin problem, right? So the most recent report was that he's day-to-day.
And it's another groin problem,
but
though.
But day-to-day could turn into week-to-week,
well,
right?
Groin problems don't heal without having 3 or 4 months off, probably.
And a lot of rehab and potentially a surgery to clean up whatever.
I think even without Erik Karlsson, that defense is sick.
It's very good. I think the Pacific Division comes down to goaltending because Martin Jones hasn't been great this year. We know that Calgary's goaltending is a massive question mark. And you mentioned...
I don't know if it is. I mean,
it still is. Come on. You can't tell
me that... Mike Smith has been playing better. Look at his numbers
he's
lately.
He's been good for the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, and David Riddick, even though he's had some blips, he's still a good goaltender.
They run hot and cold. And if playoff time comes around and they're cold, they're in a lot of trouble. And then you mentioned in the last segment, we were talking about Marc-Andre Fleury. Marc-Andre Fleury is playing too much hockey, and he looks tired.
He's played 70 games already. Obviously, he hasn't, but he's played, 60?
He's played 100 games?
Yeah. He's played too much hockey, and he looks like a goaltender who's tired. I mean, you watched him on Friday night against the Jets. You know, he's certainly not young anymore.
He's played 53 games.
It's too many games.
Yeah.
And you remember how amazing...
He's on pace to play 70.
Remember how amazing he was in the playoffs last year? I mean...
That's right.
And last year's regular season, I mean, he was out for an extended period of time. Remember, they had 5 goalies
coming
in throughout the season.
Yeah, they were using Malcolm Subban. They were using all sorts of goaltenders. They were calling up goaltenders from junior hockey.
He was probably feeling real fresh come playoff time, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens this year.
You have to believe, Shawnee, that Malcolm Subban plays more down the stretch.
I mean, for the sake of the Vegas Golden Knights, you would hope so. Otherwise, they're just going to run their all-star goaltender into the ground.
First of all, I think they sort of have an advantage in that point in that they're locked into third there. So you don't need to run Fleury out there to sort of maintain your playoff positioning. Mm-hmm. You're pretty comfortable where you currently are, which is I guess a boon or an advantage of being in third spot in the Pacific Division. But you know, when you're a goaltender and you're Marc-Andre Fleury, if you're fatigued, it shows up in your details. And that's what happens. I mean, I don't know who said it. I think it was on today's TSN Trade Center coverage I was listening to. And somebody
was
said...
Was it Trady?
It wasn't Trady. Trady didn't provide much insight. He just provided some comic relief.
He just smoked outside in the non-smoking area.
Exactly. Provided some comic relief. But one of the guys, as they were discussing Marc-Andre Fleury, said that historically, going back to his days in Pittsburgh, when he's fatigued, you see it in his details. And they're not as sharp as they were. If it wasn't for Marc-Andre Fleury playing at an otherworldly level last year in the playoffs, Vegas doesn't go as far as they do. This year it's the same situation because they're not as good of a team. Now, again, with Mark Stone, that improves them, but they don't have the same quality that they had last year, I think.
Right, and other teams, specifically the Flames and the Sharks, the two top teams, they're improved. They're better than they were last year.
Sure.
Right? It's not just Erik Karlsson. Gustav Nyquist makes them better. They're a better team than they were last year, and same thing goes for the Flames. I mean, I'll say this again. I mean, that trade looks worse and worse by the day. The trade for Elias Lindholm and Noah Hanifin. I mean, the trade was just, I mean, Lindholm is having the career year, and Michael Ferland obviously is a good player, but Dougie Hamilton.
Yeah. Now Carolina
does not make that trade an equal trade. I mean, Elias Lindholm has just been so good.
Sure.
He's just made that top line that much better.
And we'll talk about the Eastern Conference. Carolina's in a playoff spot right now as we speak. But you're right. Calgary looks very good. Forward group. They have a very good defense. Their goaltending's the big question mark. San Jose's goaltending is the big question mark. Vegas's goaltending is the big question mark. And then you look at the Central Division.
It's not as big of a question mark for me, but...
Okay, fair enough.
Martin Jones has done it. He's taken them to the final before.
Right, and he hasn't been that good this year, though. Is he able to turn it around? I mean, I have more... Of the three goaltenders, I think I like San Jose's goaltending the most because I'm concerned about, you know, straight skill. I like Fleury, but I'm concerned that they're running him into the ground too much.
A lot of pressure in San Jose. They've been a team that has underachieved in the playoffs a lot, and mm-hmm. now that they feel this window is potentially starting to close... I think there's a lot of pressure in San Jose.
It's, I think, perfectly fair. And then the Jets and the Predators. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you're talking about what should be another epic second-round series between those two teams. Does the fact that St. Louis basically did nothing today knock them out of the running? Can they still win a first-round series?
Well, you know, speaking of St. Louis and first round, whoever ends up playing St. Louis in the first round,
right now
is that a huge disadvantage? Right, and the Jets and the Predators are separated by not that many points. By 1 point right now? Mm-hmm. Right,
Jets
and
have then, 2 games in hand.
Sure, and the Jets and have seemed like they've right had now. The games in hand all year, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, the Predators and the Jets definitely want to win first because you're trying to avoid St. Louis. These teams know what's going on here. I mean, they see St. Louis and they see the long winning streak and all that. They don't want to play St. Louis. They'd rather play whether it's Minnesota or Colorado
Dallas,
or whoever because
whomever it is.
There's a huge advantage in playing one of those teams. And obviously you get the home ice advantage guaranteed, you know, in the first couple rounds, not throughout the whole playoffs, but,
right.
you know, you're guaranteed to have some more home dates. So I don't think... Right now, I would say Nashville is a huge favorite over the St. Louis Blues. I would pick the Predators over the Blues because I think they have more depth, their defense is better, and all of that. But you think the Jets want to play the Blues?
No.
You don't want to play the Blues.
Nobody wants to play the Blues given the way they're playing right now with Jordan Binnington, and now can he keep it up? It's a big question mark. But if you're the St. Louis Blues, you have that label as the team that nobody wants to face in the first round. And I mean, frankly, they're only 5 points behind Nashville right now. And after tonight, they'll have 3 games in hand on the Predators too.
And by the way, Drew, I don't think the Jets are afraid of the Blues. Like, I think the Jets would beat the Blues in a first round series.
But it's a different.
But I'm just
St.
saying
Louis.
you would rather play a team.
It's a different
that isn't red hot.
It's a different St. Louis Blues team than we saw when the Jets dominated them earlier in the year and embarrassed them in St. Louis and Laine had his 5 goals. They're a team now playing with confidence, and they seem to have a goaltender, you know, out of nowhere that can keep them in games. When we come back, we shift our focus to the Eastern Conference. We start with the moves made by some Atlantic Division teams. You're listening to NHL This Week. It's our trade deadline special on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Continuing on our look, recapping the NHL trade deadline, I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Sean Assor. We shift our focus now to the Atlantic Division, the Eastern Conference, where it was certainly a lot quieter than it was in the Western Conference. Let's start with the moves made by the Boston Bruins. They made, I guess, arguably the biggest acquisition there in the Atlantic Division, getting Marcus Johansson from the New Jersey Devils in exchange for a 2019 second-round pick and a 2020 fourth-round pick. Marcus Johansson from the Devils never really fit in well with New Jersey. We had some injury problems there. You remember him as a member of the Washington Capitals before that. What do you think about the move of Johansson to Boston, you know, as they try and battle with the Toronto Maple Leafs in the Atlantic Division?
Well, I would argue that that was the biggest move. Jordan Wheel to the Montreal Canadiens? Come on, Drew.
Huh.
No, but obviously when you're talking about...
That was sarcasm, by the way, folks.
Right, and when you're talking about Marcus Johansson, you're right. I mean, he never really reached his potential with the New Jersey Devils. And he had a good, I think, time with the Washington Capitals. But you're right, the injury, especially last year, he missed a lot of time last year. I think when you're talking about the Bruins, though, the acquisitions they made are secondary pieces. Charlie Coyle, Marcus Johansson, those aren't pieces that I think set you apart from a team like the Tampa Bay Lightning, the team that everybody knows you're going to have to beat to get to the promised land, right?
Yeah, undoubtedly.
So in that sense, I don't know how much better they are today than they were a week ago. Charlie Coyle hasn't had a good year. He's a good player, though. Marcus Johansson, same thing. I mean, ideally, you probably want him on your third line. I don't think he's going to be on that second line with David Krejci, and they've got Jake DeBrusque on that second line. He is a versatile player, though. Mm-hmm. He can play in all types of situations, but I like what they gave up because they didn't give up a lot. They gave up, what was it, a second-round pick and a fourth-round pick?
That's right.
Right? So when they gave up, when you give up a second-round pick and a fourth-round pick to get a guy who could possibly play in your top six or on your third line, it just gives you another depth forward. But overall, when I look at that division, I still think the Leafs are a better team. I think the Bruins could easily beat the Leafs in the first round, but I don't think they match up well against Tampa in the second round. So in that sense, I guess what I'm saying is those two moves, they didn't wow me. I wasn't like, oh, wow, they got Charlie Coyle and they got Marcus Johansson. This team is now really ready to go up against Tampa Bay in the second round.
Well, I think I asked John Mattis this question, that saying, you know, the Eastern Conference teams didn't really do anything to wow anybody. And as part of that, because Tampa Bay is so far and ahead, the best team in the East and maybe the best team in the NHL, that, you know, mortgaging your future, you know, to try and, you know, compete with Tampa Bay is a fool's errand.
It's a real interesting topic, and we've heard a lot of discussion about it. And just going back to Boston quickly, Ezzy, I mean, you talk about the secondary pieces. I think you're bang on with that. But what is Boston but nothing but a top-line heavy team with that Marchand, Pasternak, Bergeron line? I know David Pasternak's still sidelined for, I think, a couple more weeks now with his thumb injury at a team function, so read into that, whatever. But you talk about it, and yeah, I mean, do you mortgage the future to go up against the juggernaut that is the Tampa Bay Lightning right now? I mean, or do you just kind of risk it with what you have? You add a little bit of pieces here and there, and you say, listen, if we can beat these guys, we'll be pretty good for the rest of the way forward moving to the Stanley Cup Finals, but you don't want to give up too many first-round, second-round, you know, picks moving forward because, I mean, I was just, when you guys were talking about the Flames last segment, I was just going through the plus-minus differential for teams, and I was like, wow, Calgary, okay, like, plus 45, like, that is an unbelievable number. I wonder if who's better than them. And they, oh, my Lord, plus 81.
Yeah, Tampa Bay
is is insane how good.
Their goal differential is incredible. I looked at it on the weekend as well, and I'm like, holy moly. That's not a number you normally see, at least this early.
I mean, thought it was a typo.
With 20 games left in the season, you don't see the differential to be that high. I mean, they're going to finish with a differential of plus 100, plus 110. It's a crazy number, and which really goes to show you why Tampa Bay, are you fine with them doing nothing today? I mean, if they had done anything, you would have said why.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely okay with what they did, right? Yeah. Because you're going to be somewhere between 125 points and 130 points, honestly, incredible, by the time the season is over. They're way ahead of everybody, as you guys just mentioned, right? So I'm not surprised that they didn't do anything. I thought maybe they would bring in a guy like an Adam McQuaid, maybe a depth defenseman. You can never have enough depth when you talk about defensemen, especially, you know, when you know you're going to go on a long playoff run. So not surprised, but, you know, back to the Bruins. This is a team that's very good defensively. And, you know, we've seen them over the years cause the Jets all sorts of problems. You know, a great group of defensemen, and they've also got the depth and goal now with Jaro Halak behind Tuukka Rask. Actually, Anton Khudobin before that was also a very good backup, but they just don't score enough when you're talking about the other teams in that division, the teams that you're going to have to beat to move on. Toronto and Tampa Bay, they score goal. They you know, you're talking about 3.5 to 4 goals a game.
The Bruins are ahead of the Leafs in the standings right now. When they play each other in the first round, as it looks like they're going to, is this another season that the Bruins defeat the Leafs in the first round?
I think that series could easily go to 7 games again. I really do. I don't think the Leafs are going to sweep the Bruins or beat them in 5 games. I'm just saying. I mean, the Toronto Maple Leafs have reloaded since last year.
The Leafs did
nothing
today.
You bring in John Tavares and you bring in Jake Muzzin. I mean, you're a better team than you were last year.
The Leafs acquired Nick Petan from the Jets, as we know, and I mean, he's going to be one of the candidates to fill a fourth line role for the Leafs. I mean, are you content, if you're a Leafs fan, are you content with sitting back and the team having not done anything else? Or, I mean, they've already acquired Jake Muzzin, you know, 2 months ago.
Right.
Is that fine? Are you fine with Kyle Dubas not doing anything in addition to that?
Well, I think if you're a Leafs fan, you probably wanted to see Kyle Dubas maybe bring in another defenseman. I don't think forward depth is an issue there. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Leafs are one of the best offensive teams in the league.
Sure.
Probably behind the Tampa Bay Lightning, they're the best offensive team in the league. So, yeah, you're right. Nick Batan gets a fresh opportunity. He might play on the fourth line. He might be the 13th forward. Par Lindholm was a guy that was, you know, a fourth line guy. He was a healthy scratch at times. He was a guy they used on the wing, who played on the penalty kill. But Par Lindholm is not a guy that was a huge factor for the Leafs, right? We know who the big factors are on the Leafs. So in that sense, maybe there are some Leafs fans, Drew, that wanted Kyle Dubas to do more, but I still look at the Leafs and they're so deep up the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And Nazem Kadri's injured right now, but Tavares, Matthews, Kadri up the middle, and then you got Freddie Gauthier there on the fourth line. One of the best teams in the league up the middle, and we know all the great weapons they have on the wings. Even a guy like Zach Hyman, who had a couple of goals the other night, he doesn't get talked about a lot, but, you know, William Nylander, Kasperi Kapanen, Mitch Marner. I mean, there are so many weapons that Mike Babcock can put out there on a nightly basis. It just creates matchup nightmares for other teams. Are they the best team defensively? Absolutely not. But at least when you bring in Jake Muzzin, you've got a bona fide top four defenseman, and then that bumps Ron Hainsey down to a third pairing role. So if you're asking me who I would pick in a first-round series between the Leafs and the Bruins, I'll probably take the Leafs, but I still think it'll be a 6- or 7-game series.
And just quickly to add to the Maple Leafs roster, I mean, yeah, Nazem Kadri is hurt, but the rounding into form of William Nylander, I think, maybe alleviated some pressure. If Nylander was struggling the way he was at the beginning of re-signing with the team, I mean, he's playing tremendously right now. They're really liking his game. He's moved to the middle, and they really like the way he distributes the puck through the middle of the ice. So maybe if he was still struggling, there'd be more pressure to shore up the forwards. But I think with him rounding into form, the Leafs are looking real good.
They had an impressive comeback on Saturday night against the Habs. They were down 3-0, and then they ended up winning 6-3 against Montreal on Saturday night in an impressive comeback. They are up 4-3 right now on the Sabres. We'll do an out-of-town scoreboard update before the end of the program and recap everything that's going on from a surprisingly busy Monday night. Only the NHL would have their trade deadline and have a busy night of games as well. I mean, it's somewhat inexplicable. There was one other move I wanted to discuss, and this one isn't really going to matter for the playoffs this season. This is the trade between Buffalo and Anaheim.
Yep.
Buffalo acquires Brandon Montour.
Really good defenseman.
From the Anaheim Ducks in exchange for Brendan Gooley and a 2019 conditional first-round pick. That pick is either going to be from San Jose or St. Louis. It's not going to be Buffalo's pick. It is a first-round pick, but it's going to be in the sort of the latter half, in the probably between 20 and 30, where Anaheim will end up getting that pick. Are you surprised that Anaheim traded away Brandon Montour in this deal?
I'm a little bit surprised. And, you know, we had Marty Biron on recently, and he covers
Saturday,
the Sabres.
Yeah.
And he's always mentioned Brendan Gooley as a guy who is probably the next in line to come up from the Rochester Americans and play for the Sabres. And earlier this week, Rasmus Ristolainen was a guy who was rumored to maybe be on the move. I don't know why, because he's had a great season.
Yeah, that didn't make any sense to me.
I was a little bit surprised by Montour, because Montour is a guy who can move the puck. Great skater. He's got a great defensive game. So when you're the Ducks, I mean, why are you moving one of your top four defensemen? Obviously, you know, you're considering the salary cap implications, and, you know, it's a good move for Jason Botterill. There's no guarantee the Sabres are going to be in the playoffs, though. I mean, right now they're out of a playoff spot.
No, they're not going to make the playoffs. They're too far out at this point.
They're not mathematically out of it, but I agree with you. I still think Pittsburgh is going to get that last wild card spot. But
yeah, the Sabres.
That's just me.
The Sabres are 6 points behind both Carolina and Pittsburgh, so the Sabres would have to go on a very impressive run, and there's been no sign that you know that run is possible for them.
And just looking at some of the tweets going out right now, a lot of the talk about the Leafs and Sabres playing right now is that Brandon Montour can't get there fast enough.
Well, it's a bit of a bizarre. I mean, Brendan Gooley was a Tim Murray acquisition or a Tim Murray draft pick in Buffalo. And of course, we know it's Jason Botterill's team, so he's sort of part of the old guard. And, you know, you give up a guy who hasn't quite cracked the NHL yet. I mean, he's always been sort of the guy in waiting. And you give up a late first round pick for a guy like Brandon Montour, who's got some pretty impressive offensive upside. If you're the Sabres and your defense now is Montour, Rasmus Dahlin, Rasmus Ristolainen, I mean, Zach Bogosian is almost a veteran presence on the back end there.
And Marco Scandella.
Jake McCabe. I mean, you have a defense there that's head and shoulders above the defense you had a couple years ago. So in terms of getting the puck out of your own zone, these are all puck-moving guys for the most part.
Well, and again, from that sense, though, Drew, you mentioned Brendan Gooley's only 21 years old. He's a former second-round pick, and you're right. For the last couple of years, he's been down in the AHL. He's been, you know, the guy that that everyone expects to eventually get the call up to the NHL. Mm-hmm. But if you're Jason Botterill, you're saying, well, I can get a 24-year-old Brandon Montour who makes our team better. He can move into the top four. So let's go for it now. So in that sense, mm-hmm. I like it because as we talked about, Buffalo's, what, 6 points out of a playoff spot right now. So it's going to be tough. Not impossible. I wouldn't count them out.
I'm going to count them out. But
I don't think they're going to make it. But again, I wouldn't count them out.
Yeah,
because when you've got Jack Eichel and Jeff Skinner and
it's
you know, Rasmus Dahlin, you've got a lot of skill on that team.
It's as much of a move for next year and 2 years and 3 years and 4 years.
Sure.
He's under contract for the next, I mean, what did he sign, a 7-year contract extension in the offseason? Something like that. I think he signed a lengthy contract extension. So it's not a move for strictly this trade deadline. It's a move for years to come. And I like it from the Buffalo Sabres perspective. When we come back, actually, yeah, okay. When we come back, we'll look at the Metropolitan Division. And still to come on the program, we break out our winners and losers from what was a very busy trade deadline day in the NHL. You're listening to NHL This Week. It's a special Monday edition on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number three. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor with you in studio. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. All this week at Rumors, he starts tomorrow. One of my favorites, Dave Hempstead, is in town. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com. Remember, still to come later on in the month of March, John Doerr is going to be at Rumors. And then coming up in May from Saturday Night Live, Jay Farrow. Get your tickets to all these great upcoming comedians at rumorscomedyclub.com.
I saw Jay Farrow last time he was here, and he was awesome.
There you go.
Yeah, he was great.
Vote of confidence from both Ezzy and Sean. That's nice to hear. Let's continue our look at the Eastern Conference. The Metropolitan Division was an active division, mainly because the New York Rangers traded everybody on their team, and the Columbus Blue Jackets acquired everybody that was available at the trade deadline. They were by far one of the busier teams alongside the Winnipeg Jets. We got to start with the Blue Jackets then.
Yep.
What is their ceiling now? Are they likely to be the representative out of the Metropolitan Division in the Eastern Conference Finals now? Are they the best team in the Metropolitan Division?
I don't think you can say they're the best team in the Metro Division just because Washington is the defending Stanley Cup champion, right?
So Washington, who acquired Carl Hagelin and then Nick Jensen over the weekend, you still are going to vote for, until you beat the King, the King gets to reign atop the throne.
Yeah, but you're talking about, you know, Nick Backstrom, Evgeny Kuznetsov, Lars Eller, Tom Wilson. I mean,
Alex Ovechkin.
I was just going up the middle
yeah,
to start,
I know
but
you were.
I mean, when you're talking about the Capitals, they're still to me the best team in that division. I can't believe Pittsburgh is fighting for their playoff lives because you expected them to be either first or second in that division. But put it this way, Drew, Columbus is much better than they were a week ago because they not only did they acquire Matt Duchene and Ryan Dezingle, and they acquired Keith Kincaid and they acquired Adam McQuaid, but they didn't give up Artemi Panarin or Sergei Bobrovsky. I'm going to be really curious to see what the Blue Jackets do with their goaltenders right now.
They now have three goaltenders in Sergei Bobrovsky, Jonas Korpisalo.
Who's been very good.
And
Korpisalo's been better than Bobrovsky this year.
And Keith Kincaid from New Jersey, who, I mean, as a serviceable...
He hasn't had a good year.
He's certainly a goaltending depth. I was a little surprised to see the Devils trade him.
Well, that's a trade for the future, right? Because you're going to lose Bobrovsky.
Right. You need just
So now you have a veteran in the system to back up what we think might happen, and that's Jonas Korpisalo becoming the number one goaltender next year, right?
Worth noting, just by the way, as in passing, that the Winnipeg Jets re-signed Ken Appleby to a one-year contract today for $650,000 at the NHL level. It's a two-way contract, so he's likely, more than likely, going to be there in the AHL or in the ECHL.
He was reassigned to Jacksonville.
Yeah, I know. So just worth noting that this guy who's goaltending depth in the system was re-signed by the Jets today. We should have mentioned it earlier in the program.
Well, yeah, and it's a good point because Eric Comrie only has 1 year left on his contract, and I'm not saying that Eric Comrie won't be back, but when you're talking about next year, Mikhail Burden is now one of the top prospects in the system, so Ken Appleby is another option that you have in case Eric Comrie doesn't come back, right? That's why I imagine they signed him.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about, you know, getting back to the Columbus Blue Jackets, I mean,
Do you like the moves? I mean,
I do like the moves, and I think what I like most about the moves is it's not what we expected, right? We thought Artemi Panarin was going to be traded. We didn't think Columbus was going to be a seller. We thought they were going to be a seller and a buyer. So not only, as I mentioned, did they keep their best player, but they added. So now you've got Pierre-Luc Dubois and Matt Duchene as your top two centers. So you're better up the middle now.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't give up significant pieces, right? When you're talking about Anthony Duclair, this is not a significant piece, right?
John Tortorella hated him.
I was going to say, you get rid of a guy, you know.
Well, I think what John Tortorella did to him was not fair, by the way.
Well, apparently he didn't listen.
Well, I don't like how Torts called him out and said he was a horrible player and all that. You sandbag
obviously
a guy like that.
Just frustration boiling over. When you try to sit with a guy and you explain and you show and you try to teach.
That's the knock on Duclair.
I don't like how Torts did it in public. That's all I'm saying. I think you do that behind the scenes.
Well, and he probably has, and he probably got, and you get to the point where you get frustrated enough that you do it in public to see if that's going to get him through.
But to be able to get a guy like Ryan Dzingel off a guy who's been in the doghouse and who's probably going to sit in the press box for the majority of the rest of the season, that's a good get.
He's on his fifth team in the NHL, and he's only 23
years
old.
What's the quote? A guy doesn't get it?
Yeah. No. I think what they gave up to acquire Ryan Dzingel was good. I'm just saying I don't like what Torts did.
I don't
like when coaches rip players publicly.
Understandable.
I think that's a fair comment.
That's a fair comment. I mean, that's certainly, I understand where you're coming from with that one.
I don't like when players rip coaches publicly either.
It works both ways.
Matt Duchene.
What about Pittsburgh's Pittsburgh's acquisition? So Pittsburgh,
I guess that was privately, and then it came out in public, though, John.
Yeah, technically right. That was, but yeah.
Pittsburgh acquires Eric Gudbrandsson from the Vancouver Canucks in exchange for Tanner Pearson.
Yeah, that was a bit of a weird move to me.
Well,
They
just acquired him from Carl Hagelin from LA earlier in the year.
It's kind of funny that both of those players got traded later in the season and aren't with the teams that acquired them.
I know. It's bizarre. I mean, Gudbrandsson has certainly been the target of a lot of vitriol in Vancouver for a few years now. I don't know. I don't love Gudbrandsson on that back end. I mean, he's a stay-at-home guy. I mean, I don't know. Pittsburgh's...
Gudbrandsson's a tough cookie, though. I mean,
he's very tough.
Gudbrandsson is a big body. He's a defenseman. Yeah. He's not a guy... He's going to chip in a little bit of offense, but he's not a guy that you expect to score, you know, once every couple of games. So that's a depth move, because right now, guys... See what happened with Brian Dumoulin.
You saw what happened with
Dumoulin in the outdoor game.
You saw Chris Letang leave the outdoor game, too.
Right, and it looks like Dumoulin's going to be more serious than Chris Letang. But the point is, you know, it just gives you more depth bringing in a guy like Gudbrandsson. But as
how many stay-at-home defensemen can you have on a team for the Pittsburgh Penguins? I mean, Jack Johnson, Eric Gudbrandsson, these guys aren't offensively dynamic from the back end. It seems like you need some puck carriers as opposed to... I didn't understand that trade. I didn't understand the desperation to get rid of Tanner Pearson for Eric Gudbrandsson. I thought there's other players out there. And the reason, if you're going to acquire Gudbrandsson, the problem is he comes with a decently hefty salary, and Pittsburgh doesn't have a ton of salary cap space, so the contract salaries almost match. But I'd rather have Pearson than Gudbrandsson, in my humble opinion.
Well, I mean, it's apples and oranges, right, Drew? Because you're talking about, you know, a top-nine forward versus a second or third pairing defenseman. Eric Gudbrandsson is a guy that gives you more depth. And if Brian Dumoulin's going to be out for any significant period of time, that's all you're doing. As far as I'm concerned, you're replacing him in the lineup. But Chris Letang and Justin Schultz are their top two defensemen.
No question.
Right? So when you talk about puck moving offensive defensemen, Chris Letang, I've told you this before, I think he has to be a finalist for the Norris Trophy this year. He's had a great year, both offensively and defensively, guys. He plays big minutes in all situations for the Penguins. Letang's health is paramount. And same thing goes with Justin Schultz. I mean, he's come back. You know, he's starting to come along a little bit, but he's
broke
only been back
earlier in the year.
Well, he missed, what did he miss, 45, 50 games?
Something like that. I mean, he certainly is a guy that is going to need some time and, you know, to get some of the rust off his body.
Put it this way, Gudbrandsson isn't going to make or break the Penguins season.
Do the Penguins make the playoffs?
Yeah, I said that last segment. I think they do.
At whose expense? At Carolina's expense?
Yeah, if it's between those two teams.
Yeah, so you can't foresee...
Well, Pittsburgh's a better team than Carolina. Is anybody going to argue with that?
Well, I mean...
Come on, Drew.
They are because of Crosby and Malkin. But, I mean, top to bottom...
Carolina's playing really well right now. I don't think
just because Crosby and Malkin. I think because of Justin Schultz.
Yeah.
I think because of Chris Letang. I think their goaltending is better.
Yeah, fair.
Bill Kessel, come on.
That's fair, yeah.
Team that won the Cup 2 years in a row.
Yeah, that's fair. They're not playing that well right now, and you wonder when they're going to turn it on, because before you know it, it gets late quickly. But I'll agree with you. Yeah, that Pittsburgh is better, but they're not playing as well right now. Carolina's got the momentum with all their, you know, storm surge or whatever the hell they call it when they celebrate goofily. And, you know, I have no problem with their celebrations.
They're 8-2 in their last 10.
Yeah,
bunch of jerks.
They're making their run.
What a bunch of
jerks. Well, then how about that? Carolina's making their run. They're in a playoff spot right now. Michael Furland.
They're tied with Pittsburgh.
I know. They're in a playoff spot.
I got too excited
spot,
here.
But they didn't do anything today. That's what I'm saying. They didn't do anything today. Should they have done something? Michael Furland.
Perhaps the price too high on Furland?
They brought in Teuvo Teravainen. I mean,
they brought in
not Teuvo Teravainen, sorry.
Nino Niederreiter.
Nino Niederreiter. So, I mean, that was a significant move. Michael Furland obviously is a guy that they would rather keep for their playoff run than trade. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, was Carolina going to bring in anybody that's going to make them a Stanley Cup contender?
No, of course not, because they're not going to be.
Pittsburgh can at least, I think, give a team like, for example, the Tampa Bay Lightning a run for their money. If you're the Tampa Bay Lightning, that's not a team you want to play in the first round.
No, it's not a team you want to play because of Crosby and Malkin and Kessel. I mean, that's
just a better overall team, though.
Oh, it's better.
It's not just those players. I mean, it's just a better team offensively, defensively, in net. So I'm just saying, I mean, I don't think there was any move out there. Like, was Carolina going to bring in a Mark Stone or a Wayne Simmons or whoever, Kevin Hayes, whoever it was, and then all of a sudden you think they're going to be a Stanley Cup contender?
No.
That's all I'm saying.
What about the teams that were sellers in the Metropolitan Division? The Philadelphia Flyers, we know what they got for Wayne Simmonds, Ryan Hartman, and a conditional fourth-round pick. The New York Rangers, Zuccarello gets them a couple conditional picks, a second and a third that could potentially turn into two firsts. Kevin Hayes gets them a first, Lemieux and a conditional fourth. Adam McQuaid gets them a fourth and a seventh. Did the Rangers do well enough given their three names that they sold?
Yeah, I think so. Because you traded all of the guys that are pending UFAs, right? We expected Matt Zuccarello to be traded. We expected Kevin Hayes and Adam McQuaid to be traded. So when you talk about the return, and you just stockpile draft picks. That's what I think you do when you're a team like the Rangers, who isn't going to make the playoffs this year, and quite frankly might not make the playoffs next year either.
And you talk about stockpiling draft picks. The Rangers have 5 picks in the first 2 rounds of the 2019 draft, so looking pretty good entering this year's draft.
Yeah, they certainly will have the draft capital to make a move or to rebuild, you know, what is a bit of a shell of itself in the roster right now.
You know, you wonder if they can acquire an Artemi Panarin,
well,
right?
We know that that's been linked for a while now. Yep. Is that Panarin is, you know, a big city guy.
Wants to be near the ocean.
There isn't a city bigger than New York, so you know.
Throw a couple firsts towards Columbus and maybe a prospect or two. And
well, you don't have to trade for him. He's
UFA, of course. Right.
UFA, but you know, certainly.
So make him an offer he can't
certainly
refuse.
Would accelerate the rebuild in New York with Artemi Panarin.
All right, Godfather, let's get off the air here.
Well, we still got one segment left. When we come back, out of town scoreboard, winners and losers from a busy NHL trade deadline day. You're listening to NHL This Week. One final segment to come on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment. Monday evening, we put a bow on trade deadline day. We hope you've enjoyed the 15 hours of coverage we've brought to you all day long today.
What year is it right now?
It's 2019. Shawnee, you might be going a little haywire.
Okay, yeah.
You've been here for a while now.
Yeah, it's been a long day.
I think we could have gone 17 hours.
Shawnee might have been a shell of himself by that point in time. But
let me just go buy some jam and then I'll come back.
That's right. All the guy wanted was some honey and some jam for his peanut butter sandwich, and he wasn't able to get any of that all day long. It really is upsetting. But
hey, Winnie the Pooh, let's get into the winners and losers.
I was going to do the out-of-town scoreboard first. Is that okay? Can I do that, or are you desperate to go winners and losers?
No, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. A quick out-of-town scoreboard look. In New Jersey, the New Jersey Devils have a 2-1 lead on the Montreal Canadiens with 15 seconds to go in that game. In Tampa Bay, the Lightning have a 2-1 lead on the LA Kings. In Nashville, the Oilers had a 1-0 lead on the Predators. That's now a 2-1 lead for the Predators after 40 minutes. And a final now in Toronto, the Maple Leafs defeat the Buffalo Sabres by a 5-3 margin. 0-0 between the Florida Panthers and the Colorado Avalanche. And still to come tonight, the Anaheim Ducks and the Vancouver Canucks are going to do battle. That's a look at the out-of-town scoreboard for this busy Monday at the end of the NHL trade deadline day. You want to start with winners or losers there, Mr. Ginsburg? What do you want? Do you want a winner or do you want a loser to start?
What does Shawnee want to do?
No,
it doesn't matter what I
want
to do.
You're going to do a winner or a loser, and then Shawnee's going to have an option.
Okay, sure. Let's start with some winners.
Okay, a winner.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Well, I gotta start off. Are we gonna do two or three? Because I have three.
Just do one winner to start. Do one at a time, and then Sean will do one. And then
but how many are
one.
We going to do total?
I don't know.
Three, let's do three winners, three losers.
You have 10 minutes, so do that until I cut your tongue off.
We've got to start off with the Jets. I mean, they land Kevin Hayes. That's a guy who had been rumored to be a trade target of the Jets for months now. So they acquire a bona fide top six center, whether it's he's a second-line center or a third-line center. He's a great player, and he just gives them more depth up the middle. So it's got to be the Jets. And then I also like bringing
one
in...
One at a time.
No, I'm just saying some of the other moves I like.
Jets? Okay, sorry.
Yeah, I like Nathan Beaulieu, gives them another depth defenseman on the left side. I also like bringing in Matt Hendricks for that veteran presence, a guy who might not even play that much for the Jets down the stretch or in the playoffs, but he's a great guy in the locker room, a really well-respected player. So I'm not going to go through all the moves, but as a whole, I really liked what Chevy did.
Sean Assar.
I'm going to go with the Preds. I really like what the Nashville has done. I mean, special teams was a concern for them. They shored up in those departments. I mean, Wayne Simmons can kill penalties. Fiala is an excellent skill player for the power play. Wayne Simmons back to him. Net front guy. They didn't give up too much. I mean, what did they give up? Ryan Hartman, Kevin Fiala, who was, you know, couldn't really find a place to stay in the lineup, a conditional fourth rounder. I mean, David Poyle's been known to make some shrewd moves, and here he was again.
I'm going to say that the San Jose Sharks are a winner in my book. I like that acquisition of Gustav Nyquist quite a bit.
I think you just like saying Gustav Nyquist.
A little bit.
It is a fun name.
There is an element to that I do like saying his name over and over again. But to not have to subtract anybody from your roster.
Yeah, it's a good move.
That is a big acquisition. I think the San Jose Sharks are the best team in the Pacific Division and certainly should be in the Western Conference Finals as a result of that move. But, you know, obviously, as we know, Stranger things have happened, and a lot of that is dependent on the health of Erik Karlsson. Any other winners?
Yeah, I've got two more.
Please.
I wasn't sure if we were going to do the losers and winners at the same time, but I'm going to say the Tampa Bay Lightning for the moves they didn't make.
They didn't do anything.
It's one of the deepest teams in the league, if not the deepest team. It's clearly the best team standings-wise. So I really like that the Tampa Bay Lightning didn't give up any current roster players or give up any draft picks because, quite frankly, when you have Steven Stamkos, Nikita Kucherov, Braden Point, Victor Hedman, the list goes on and on and on. Andrei Vasilevsky, one of the best goalies in the entire league. I really didn't think they needed to add anybody. So I'm going to say the Lightning are a winner just because that's all they do is win.
By doing nothing, they've won. Sean?
I got to look to Vegas once again. I mean, I really like the addition of Mark Stone. A lot of, you know, everyone here did so much research on Mark Stone, and, you know, his metrics are unbelievable. What he does as a two-way player, incredible. They didn't have to give up one of their top prospects in Cody Glass to get him. So, I mean, it's looking good in Vegas if they can get the depth scoring again and, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury doesn't burn out. They're a formidable opponent in the playoffs.
I will say that the Columbus Blue Jackets, in my mind, are a winner. I like any time a general manager is aggressive and says to his team, I believe in you. And given the Metropolitan Division, given how it's wide open right now, I think the Columbus Blue Jackets have as good an option of going on a run as anybody. And once you get to the conference finals and once it becomes a 7-game series, anything can happen. Stranger things have happened. I mean, the Washington Capitals weren't supposed to beat the Tampa Bay Lightning in the Eastern Conference Finals last year. We know what happened there. If you're the Blue Jackets, I think these moves should win you one series, which you've never done before, can very well win you two series, and it, you know, once you're into that finals, anything can happen at that point.
Yeah, I was going to pick Columbus as one of my winners as well. So instead, I'm going to pick the team that they made a trade with, the New York Rangers, and the team the Jets obviously made a trade with. The Rangers, we knew, were going to be sellers. They got rid of Kevin Hayes, Matt Zuccarello, and Adam McQuaid. They get the first-round pick. They get Brendan Lemieux, a guy who can be a good third or fourth-line player for them going forward. They get a fourth and a seventh for Adam McQuaid, which I thought was a good haul for a depth defenseman. And then they get a second, a fourth-round pick for Matt Zuccarello. So I thought, you know, stockpiling draft picks is exactly what Jeff Gordon, you know, should have done, and that's what he did do. So I think the Rangers are a big winner.
Shawnee?
Just if you're in a rebuild, what do you need? Draft picks up the wazoo, and the Rangers did it, and they got a decent haul. I mean, some first and second rounders. I mean, in a rebuild, it's important assets, and they went out and grabbed them.
I thought another big winner for moves they didn't make was the Edmonton Oilers. I mean, you heard maybe a guy like Jesse Puljujarvi was going to be traded. I think that would have been a huge mistake.
Yeah, he's injured, which probably prevented them from doing something silly.
But even like leading up to the trade deadline, you heard that maybe Jesse Puljujarvi was going to be talked.
Why didn't they trade Chase on, though? Why don't you trade Alex Chason?
Maybe they're going to sign him.
Oh, well, maybe. I mean, you sign the guy to a PTO. You get a lot of value out of him. Maybe if you can get a third-round pick out
maybe
of him.
Maybe the asking price was too high. I mean, Chason won the Cup last year with Washington, so I think there were other teams that were probably calling Keith Gretzky.
I find it curious that you get the guy on a PTO. You pay him nothing for the most part. You get a lot of value out of him all year long. This is the time to trade him, and if you want to re-sign him, you re-sign him in the offseason.
Maybe Keith Gretzky was asking for a second-rounder when teams were offering a third or fourth-rounder.
And I wouldn't have traded a second-rounder for him, so I agree with that. We have, I'm sure, a bunch of losers, as we do each and every year at the trade deadline. Here are some of the losers that we have on this trade deadline.
Loser! You're a loser! Are you feeling sorry for yourself?
Ezra?
Good little sound clip. I think the New York Islanders have to be a loser. Just because you're currently first in the Metro Division, I still don't think they're the best team in the Metro Division. We know they're well coached. The goaltending has been excellent this year with Robin Lehner and Thomas Greiss. But I still think if you really want to go far in the playoffs, you had to add somebody. And we heard that the Islanders might have been in on a variety of players, including Mark Stone, but they didn't acquire anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the Islanders, for a team that I still think could easily be bumped in the first round or bounced in the first round. Could you be bumped in the first round?
Sure, you can be bumped, or you can be as easily as you can be bounced, you can be bumped.
I just think they were a loser just because they didn't acquire anybody when we heard that they were in on a bunch of players. So I still think the Islanders are a great story. I didn't pick them to make the playoffs this year, but Barry Trotz to me is hands down the coach of the year, and they've just been a great story there.
Johnny?
I got to go to Cowtown. I got to go to Calgary. I'm disappointed with the lack of moves that the Flames made. I mean,
come on, Oscar Fantenberg is your boy.
I was going to say, when Oscar Fantenberg is your only move, I mean, talk about a fun name to say. But, I mean, you know, was it a lack of cap space that got to them, perhaps? I mean, there's word that a deal with Jason Zucker fell through. I know
Pierre LeBrun and Michael Russo reporting that Jason Zucker there was a deal between the Flames and the Wild for the Flames to acquire Jason Zucker, and for whatever reason that fell through at the last minute.
Well, that contract though is just awful.
But if they were going to make the trade, it sounds like they were going to make the trade, and something maybe
5 years for another 5 or 6 years.
Maybe the Flames dodged a bullet by that trade falling through.
Yeah, good point. But you know, unproven net mining. You're hopefully the Cinderella story that is David Riddick doesn't become a pumpkin and allows many goals in net. But if Mike Smith and David Riddick can share a load in the playoffs, and Calgary will be okay. If not, and it's going to be tough for the Flames.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you in Calgary. I don't think that they are, I mean, despite where their standings are right now, their goaltending questions are significant still. I'm not sure that I like their decision to do nothing. And I know that they were in a bit of salary cap issue, but I'm not crazy about their decision. I'm not crazy about the moves the Pittsburgh Penguins made today. I find them to be curious. Tanner Pearson made a lot more sense to me as a top nine forward than Eric Gudbrandsson does on their back end. They acquired Chris Weidman from the Florida Panthers in exchange for Sebastian Dee. That's a minor move at best.
Weidman's a guy that's been traded quite a bit.
He's been traded three times this year, right? Then he go from he was in Edmonton and then he went to Florida, and I mean, he's been around the block a number of times. I don't love the moves that the Penguins made today. I'm not sure that they've positioned themselves for anything other than a first-round exit in the playoffs.
Right, Drew, and that was my other loser, was the Pittsburgh Penguins. I agree with Shawnee. Calgary was one of my three losers along with the Islanders. And when you're talking about the Penguins, I still think they're going to make the playoffs, and we'll find out here because we have a month and a half to go in the season. They're tied with the Carolina Hurricanes right now, but the Hurricanes have the points tiebreaker. So the reason why I'm so concerned about the Penguins, and maybe I shouldn't be as concerned because the Penguins have the two Stanley Cups in the last 3 years, but that defense, as currently constructed, you take Chris Letang and Brian Dumoulin out of the lineup, and boy, does that D look thin. So that's why I'm concerned. Still a great offensive team, but that defense, if you're going up against the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round, look out.
We have about 20 seconds or so. Ottawa Senators, winner or loser?
Oh, I think huge winner.
Huge winner.
Absolutely. The return they got for Mark Stone was I think, a good return. I mean, some people might argue with that, but Eric Brännström is obviously the key piece there. Mm-hmm. And I like the return they got for Matt Duchene. You get your first-round pick back. Vitaly Abramov is a prospect that we really don't know what he's going to turn into, but the first-round pick is what you needed to get back because that's what you traded to get him. So, I think that's a good return. Cody Ceci, I guess, is the one guy that didn't get traded, but I thought Pierre Dorion did pretty well.
That's it for the Monday, special Monday edition of NHL This Week. We hope you've enjoyed our trade deadline coverage. 15 hours starting bright and early at 6 a.m. on this station. That's some good hockey coverage for you. Big thank you to our guest, Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press. We were joined by John Mattis, Rick Carpinello. Was that everybody? Did I miss anybody? Yep. No, that was everybody in terms of the guests. In case you missed anything on the program, it's available for download on tsn1290.ca, on our website, illegalcurve.com. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Big thank you to Chris Curry doing a great job behind the board. For Sean Asor, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for listening all day long to your home of hockey in Winnipeg, TSN Radio 1290.